Is that the sun?
Okay, this is the planetarium, and kind of this is the evening sky in Ann Arbor as it will look tonight at about 7 p.m. And the reason we know it's Ann Arbor is because the sky is very blue and very light polluted. If we go out to a rural area, it'll look a little bit darker, and you'll see probably 5 times as many stars. So before we get started here, I'd like to point out a couple of different ways of orienting ourselves in here. First of all, if you look to the four corners of the planetarium, we see north up here, and west, south, east. And these are the actual directions of the building. So this is actual north. If you've got a good sense of geography, if you go outside the building and look in that direction, that's north. For those of you who don't have that, if you think about where North Campus is, that's north. This point directly above my head, what do I call that if I'm an astronomer?
The zenith.
The zenith. Okay, and we've got a line that runs from north to south, passing through the zenith. What do we call that? The meridian. And if I've got stars crossing, which way are they going to cross? This way or this way? To my point of view, will they move from the east to the west or the west to the east?
East
to west. Okay, if I start here and I draw a line all the way around the base of the dome, what's that line going to represent? Actually, no. Nope. And that's because the celestial equator is about here, so farther up in the sky. And I'll tell you in a minute why I know that. So what would we be seeing?
Horizon.
Horizon, okay. So horizon, what's the definition of that? Okay, it's any, okay, here's my zenith. And if I go 90 degrees to any side, that's as far down as I can see. So 90 degrees to any side of the zenith is the horizon. And the celestial equator passes 90 degrees below the North Pole. And how do we know where the North Pole is? What's a good reference point?
Polaris.
And how do we find Polaris?
Ursa Minor.
It's part of Ursa Minor. And what points to it?
Ursa Major.
Ursa Major. Okay. And we find those in the northern part of the sky. We've got Big Dipper over here. Can everybody see that? Okay, so the Big Dipper, in winter, it's standing on its tail. So the tail's down here, and here's the Dipper. And we use these two stars here to point to Polaris. Now, there's actually nothing very distinguished about Polaris. It's very dim, and it's not particularly exciting. But everything in the sky rotates around that because that's very close to the North Pole. So I'm going to crank this around and hope that you don't get sick. But what you'll want to see is that all the stars that are within a certain number of degrees from Polaris never rise or set. What do we call those? Circumpolar stars. So if I keep my pointer there, everything else moves and we all get sick. And we go backwards in time. And that's even more fun.
Make it go really, really fast.
Okay, so that's how the sky is going to move. A couple of other things that we can do in here. This is a representation of the grid that we use to define the sky. So these lines that run north-south, what do we call those? Declination. And the ones that run this way? Okay, that's a measure of right ascension. It's actually flipped when we talk about it. These lines would be lines of right ascension because they measure how far east or west we are. When we look up here, this part, we've got numbers that have degrees. So here is 360, or 0, 15, 30, 45. So what we find is that if we divide the number of degrees in an orbit, so 360 degrees, we divide that by 24 hours in a day, we find that there are 15 degree zones, and that represents 1 hour of movement. So in 24 hours, we'll have seen all of these stars past this point, and we'll be back to where we started. So this line here is representing the celestial equator. It's actually a bit lower than it ought to be, but assume that that represents the celestial equator. What then does this dashed line here represent with the months written? The ecliptic. So they're not lined up. And another thing to look at, this line is running across the meridian. So if we start at the base here, we've got 0, 10, 20 degrees, all the way up to 90 degrees being at the zenith. Polaris, what number is Polaris associated with?
42.
And 42 is what? 42 degrees of altitude.
Oh.
So altitude is the number of degrees from the horizon to a star. So this star here would be at what altitude to us?
26.
Yeah, about 26. And this one would be at 80 degrees of altitude. So altitude is determined by the observer. Just like circumpolar stars, a star can't say, oh, I'm circumpolar all the time, because circumpolarity depends on the observer. To somebody at the North Pole, there are going to be a lot of circumpolar stars. And somebody at the equator isn't going to see many at all, or won't see any. So circumpolarity and altitude and things like that are defined by where you are observing from. So what we would find if we went outside tonight, I know this is a stellar course, so we're looking mostly at stars, but there are a few planets that are really, really bright right now, so you ought to be able to find those. If we went out and it's 6 or 7 p.m., so just after it's getting dark, if we look over here to the southwestern part of the sky, about here, there will be a very bright object that's larger than any star that you'll see in the sky. Any guesses on what that would be?
Jupiter.
Nope, not Jupiter. Good guess.
Saturn.
Not Saturn. Good guess.
Venus.
Venus. Yeah, it's going to be Venus. So that'll be over here. And the other two that were mentioned, Saturn and Jupiter, will be over here. So Jupiter is halfway in size between Saturn and Venus, and that's very bright. And Saturn is a little tiny dot, but it's got a very intense brightness to it. And what you'll notice about planets, besides the fact that they're going to be much brighter than any of the stars, is that the planets don't appear to twinkle. So if you stare at them, they'll have a constant brightness. And most stars will seem to have some change in their apparent brightness when you look at them. Now I'm going to move the sky forward just a little bit. Okay, this is what the sky would look like if you went outside at, say, 8:30 tonight. And Venus will be lower. That'll be way down here, closer to your horizon. And Jupiter and Saturn will be overhead. And if you look right here, we see it looks like somebody made a mistake, because it's all fuzzy and dim. This represents the Pleiades, and the Pleiades are a star cluster. So if I took out a pair of binoculars tonight and looked at the Pleiades, I would be able to see more than 100 stars all grouped together there. And the Pleiades tonight and Jupiter and Saturn will be forming a triangle. So if you can find one, you can find the others. The Pleiades, if you stare directly at them, they'll disappear because they're rather faint.
Yeah, I noticed that.
So if you look here, like if you look just a little bit away from it, so they're slightly out of the corner of your eye, you'll be able to see them. It's because our eye doesn't have enough receptors. If you look directly at something, it loses its sensitivity. So you want to look slightly away from those. Let me turn these lights up just a little bit more to make a point. When we look in the sky in the evening, we'll see a big arch of stars here. And these are all pretty bright. And right here, we can see Orion's Belt. And that's very recognizable. The trick to remember is that in here, everything looks very close together. But Orion's Belt, when you look at it in real life, is going to look much bigger. It's going to take up a huge part of the sky. So you've got to look for something a little bit bigger. But you'll be able to see this arch of stars and Orion. And what I'm going to do is just briefly run through the stars that are at this part of the sky, so that when you go outside tonight, you'll be able to already identify certain things. If you're sitting in the south and want to move, like over where you can see better, that might be wise. Yeah, I would be able to see better from here. Can you see over there? The middle one is the Orion Nebula. So that's another thing. You've got a telescope, it's a lot of fun to look at. And in this arm, you go up to his elbow here and up to his hand. This is a club. So he's carrying a club. And in this hand here, you see four stars that are kind of curved. That's his shield. So in his right arm, he's got a club. In his left arm, he has a shield. And there are two stars here that are bright enough that we should learn what they are. This star up here is called Betelgeuse. And anybody heard of that name before?
Yeah.
Yeah. The Disney cartoon or Disney movie was named after that star. This star is very red. So it tells you right there that the star is relatively cool. And this star down here, oh, I didn't even tell you, this is his right shoulder or his right armpit. You know, he's holding the club up. So that's Betelgeuse. And then down on his left side, this is his left leg or his left knee or his left foot, depending on who you talk to. And that is Rigel. So we've got Betelgeuse and Rigel. Anybody know what Orion is hunting?
A bear.
Okay, not hunting a bear.
Dang.
No, good guess.
That's an Ursa.
Ursa, the bears are both in the north. Ursa Minor is here. Ursa Major is here. Other guesses. It is an animal. Taurus. Taurus is a bull. And that is who he's fighting. What we're going to do is, the belt is here. We'll go to the right. And we get to this star. This is Aldebaran. And Aldebaran is the eye of Taurus. Taurus is a little bit unfortunate in the way he's drawn. But he's got two very distinguishing features, and those are his horns. And if we start at Aldebaran and we move out here, that's one horn. We move out here, that's the other horn. Now what we know is, okay, height of horn, height of Orion. No wonder Orion is a little bit scared. So Taurus here, now the rest of his body is really impressive. This is his head. And his head is actually made up of the stars in another cluster called the Hyades. So this is the Hyades, that's the Pleiades. So his head is here, and his body is here. Not terribly impressive. I think this is part of his body, too. But kind of hard to see a bull, but he does have impressive horns. And the Pleiades is riding on his back. So is Orion hunting by himself? No, he has with him two companions. What kind of animals are they?
Dogs.
So he's got two hunting dogs with him. We can get to the first hunting dog by following the belt down to the left. And this star is Sirius. Sirius is the dog star by nickname. And Sirius, other than the moon and the planets, is the brightest thing that you'll see in the sky. So tonight, Sirius will be very bright. And Sirius is part of Canis Major, the big dog. And this is actually drawn pretty well. Up here we have the head. And if Sirius is the eye, these four stars are his ears. And these four are his mouth. So he's yapping at something. So his head is very large. Then these stars form his backbone and his tail. And his back legs are here and his front legs are there. So a big head and a little body. Can we all see how that works? Does it remind you of a particular type of dog? I don't know the name for these, but if you draw a little bow tie on his neck and put him on a sweatshirt, You've seen those, right?
Those are basset hounds.
No, they're not basset hounds, are
they're
they?
They're not.
Aren't they some sort of terrier?
Scottish terrier.
Scottish terrier. I think it looks like a Scottish terrier. So you can make your own decisions about that. The other dog we get to, we start, these are Orion shoulders. So we start up here. And if we go to the left through Beetlejuice and keep going, we get to this star here. And this is pretty bright. And the star's name is Procyon. And Cyan means blue, so it's a bluer star. Procyon, part of a very complex constellation. Okay, watch out. Did you catch it? The star, two stars. Holding. So not something I'd be terribly frightened of, but it must be a very vicious hunting dog. So that's the one star, that's the other star. Very impressive. And just for fun, do we see this star here, 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 those three? They're very faint. That area of the sky is called Monoceros. Monoceros is a unicorn, so that takes even more imagination. Monoceros actually wasn't named, though, until like the late 1600s. So the Greeks named the dogs, but I think it was the Dutch who named Monoceros. A constellation, by the way, doesn't necessarily mean just a picture of the sky. The sky is divided into like 60-odd regions, and each of those regions is called a constellation, whether or not there are any recognizable stars in it. There are two more constellations that we should learn before we leave. Okay, these three stars here make up Orion's head. And what is he wearing on his head? Guess what? He's a hunter. Helmet. Nope. Good guess, though. Another guess?
An orange safety hat?
A safety hat. That would probably be wise, but he's not that advanced.
Seriously, that's what they wear.
Okay, he's wearing a baseball cap. Yep. I know baseball wasn't invented back when Orion was first around, but I know he's wearing a cap, or at least for our purposes, he's wearing a cap, because if we draw a straight line up through his head, we get to this star. And that star is called Capella. So Capella, Capella, Cap. So that'll be your way of remembering that. And that's good to know, because when these stars first get over the horizon, Capella will rise before a lot of the other things in the sky. So if you can find Orion before the Sirius and Procyon are up above the horizon, you'll be able to see Capella. Capella is part of a five-sided constellation called Auriga or Auriga, and he's a charioteer, but we'll talk about him more in 2 weeks when we come down. So just so you know, that's Capella. And then the final constellation we want to talk about before you leave is this constellation right here. We get there by starting at Rigel and tracing a line through Betelgeuse and arching. And we have two bright stars right next to each other, and they represent the heads of Gemini, the twins. So these are brothers up in the sky. Their names are Castor and Pollux. Has anybody heard those names before? Face Off, the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so you'll have no trouble remembering those names. And what we actually see are two stick figures doing the wave. Yeah, we do. So this stick figure here, if we start at his head, there's his body and two legs and his arms. And here's the second twin, his body, two legs, and his arms. So they're holding hands, doing the wave, right there in the sky. Two stick figures. And once again, when we come down in 2 weeks, again, we'll talk more about who they are. So to review quickly, what constellation is this?
Orion.
And this star is Betelgeuse, Rigel. And if we follow the belt to the right, this is Aldebaran, and what constellation is this?
Taurus.
Taurus, and riding on his back, the Pleiades, okay? If we look for his two companions, the first one here is, what's this one?
Canis Major.
Canis Major, the big dog, and the star is Sirius. And Canis Minor, this star is Procyon. And what we find, Procyon is on the same side as Pollux. And Castor, the other twin, is on the same side of the sky as Capella. So Castor and Capella are close, Pollux and Procyon are close. And once again, we got Capella by going through the head of Orion. So, questions about where those things are? The point about the head, just for review, is zenith, the line north, south, through the zenith, meridian, the line around the base of the dome,
horizon.
The celestial equator runs here. Questions then? Okay, if you don't have any questions, we'll be back in the room up on the fifth floor in 2 weeks. There's no class next week. If you have questions, you can stay after or talk to me at office hours on Monday or send me a
homework assignment in 2 weeks.
Follow up. Okay, not 1 week. Oh, you need 4 weeks. And we'll still wait another 2 minutes for people to show up. I had somebody, this is my fourth semester teaching, and my first semester, like the third week of lab, a person in the back was like, we didn't go over this in lecture. Like, yeah, we did this morning. No, we didn't. I know I was there. And it turned out he was in the wrong place. He was supposed to be next door. So we don't want to go 3 or 4 weeks till we discover we're in the wrong place.
Oh.
So if you're not here for Hughes' session of Astro 102, this is your best time to exit. And while we're waiting, on the tables we have some celestial spheres. We're just getting started. And the ones on the outside tables you can spin to make the stars rise and set. And the one in the middle has lots of names on it. So if you want to find a particular favorite star, that's the place to look. And no one's taking me up on my offer. Can I see that globe that you have there through the slide that way? We'll be doing an exercise with these next week. And what we find, you can pull this out of the grid and set it back in so that we're at a different location on the globe. And then stars rise and set. So in 2 weeks, you'll now come excited because you know what we'll be talking about. Here for Astro 102. Good. Just want to make sure. Okay. I'll go ahead and pass out a copy of the course syllabus and give you time to read through that before we talk about it. Here for Astro 102. Okay. For those of you who have come in since the explanation is given, we won't always have people taping our class. They're just wanting to get a sample of different types of classes to record, so don't be intimidated by it. Everybody is avoiding looking in that direction. They don't record you that way. Have we all had a chance to read through this then? Okay. My approach to this course, having taught it for 4 semesters, is to make the discussion section as much of a lab as possible. So we'll do our best to correspond with what's going on in lecture, though that won't always work because sometimes there are lab exercises that are just so important we can't skip them, even if they're about a lecture that happened 2 weeks ago. So every week I'll tell you what chapter we're doing the lab on or what chapter we'll be talking about, and we'll try to stick with the schedule for the lecture as much as possible. I've got on my website a list of the tentative schedule for what we'll be doing and what chapter you should have read before discussion. So our approach will be that every week I'll give you a little packet that has a mini lab, and we'll spend about half the time completing a lab exercise in groups and then half the time talking about it or talking about any other questions that you have about the lecture or about homeworks or anything like that. If you look at the upper left-hand corner, I have my website written down, and you will come to know and love my website because it will have all sorts of important information. It'll have the homeworks, so if you miss a class, you can print it out from the website. It'll have copies of the lab exercise, so if you miss a class or lose it, you can print it out from there. And perhaps most importantly, I have a long list of astronomy links. So if you want to know something about black holes, I've got 5 sites on black holes. If you want to know about observing, photojournalism, photo astronomy, telescope basics, history of astronomy, you name it, I probably have a website that has a link or 2 or 5. So that's a good place if you have questions on your homework or questions about anything in astronomy to check out. Okay, continuing down the list then, homework is the second point. And I'll give out a homework just about every week. So by the end of the term, we'll probably have 9 or 10 homeworks that we've done. And I'll try to keep them as non-mathematical as possible. But there are times where we need math. But if I ask a math question, I'll always ask for an explanation as well. So we won't do math just for the sake of doing math. We'll try to do math in a way that explains a concept. The only exception to that rule is this week. Homework number 1 is a math review. So it's nothing too complicated, but you need to know how to add. You need to know how to work with powers of 10 and convert units. So if you've got an inch and you want a centimeter, how do you get from one to the other? So basic math. Most of you, this will be a review. The homework will take 10 minutes and you'll be done. But if you have questions about that, chapter 1 is a good reference. I have office hours on Monday, and I have email, and I'm very good about answering email. So if you're intimidated by that, don't be. We just want to make sure we all start out understanding the difference between a meter and a centimeter. One of the homeworks I'll let you drop the score on. So either if you have a bad week and you get a low score, or if you miss a week, then you can drop that assignment. The key to that then is to make sure that for the most part you get your assignments done on time. I won't accept late homeworks unless you're near death or have a valid excuse that's of equal magnitude. So you'll want to be here or turn it into my mailbox early. My mailbox is in Denison on the 8th floor, in the same hall as the elevators. So if you need to turn something in early, email me and I'll tell you where to drop it off. Questions about homework and how that's going to work? No? Okay. Third point on the syllabus, planetarium quiz. Part of what is fun about this course is that we get to learn all about the stars and the constellations. So we'll start out for the last half of today going down to the planetarium and seeing what we could see if it was clear tonight. And in Ann Arbor, that's not a likely event. But once in every 2 or 3 weeks, it will be clear and you'll be able to see what's out there. So you'll be able to figure out what you can see. And by the end of the term, you'll know about 30 constellations and about 20, 25 stars. So I think most people enjoy that part of the course most. It's something that you'll remember 10 years from now. In five months, you probably won't remember the mass of Jupiter. But you might very well be able to recognize where Jupiter is in the sky. Or you might not remember that Alcor and Mizar are a binary star system, but you'll remember where they are. So those will start to sound familiar to you, and I think you'll enjoy that. Grades, point number 4, your discussion grade will be 30% of your total grade for the course. So generally, you'll want to not waste your time here. 30% is a pretty big chunk, but generally it'll pull people's grades up. Homeworks are generally easier than exams, so this is a good place to bring up your grade for the course. Plagiarism is one way that you can bring down your grade for this course. And plagiarism is when you write something and it's not your own ideas or your own words. So we'll do a lot of group work in here. Starting next week, we'll work on celestial spheres together in groups of 2 or 3. You'll talk with each other, you'll ask questions, and that's good. That's why we're here. The problem, though, is when you write down word for word the same answer to a homework as somebody else, or you have the same diagram, and I can't tell if you copied it or if you
actually came up with it yourself. So to discourage people copying from one another, I'll give a zero to anybody who copies a homework. So if you have questions about what it means to write in your own words, talk with me about it now, or this coming week, or sometime before it becomes an issue. So that's point five. And then the last 2 points are office hours and meeting times. I have office hours on Monday right after the lecture. How many people have class then? Okay, about half of you. So for half of you, that's not a convenient time. For the other half, it's just take the elevator up to the ninth floor and visit. For those of you who can't meet during that time, just email me and I'll set up another time to meet with you. So we'll just find a half hour that you don't have class and I don't have class. So not a problem. Also, if you have a question that you don't really need to set up an office hour for, just like you had a typo on that question, or is this a good start to an answer for number three, just email to me and I'll try to get back to you within a day. So if there are less complicated things, that's an easier way to ask questions. And then meeting times. You're scheduled for, I teach 4 discussions during the week, Monday at 1 and 2 and Wednesday at 1 and 2, and you're the last one. So you're at a bit of a disadvantage in that if you miss this class, you don't have any makeups to go to. But what that means is that if for some reason you can't come to a Wednesday class, if you write to me ahead of time, you can come on Monday. So I really don't care which class you show up to, just come to 1 of the 4, and let me know ahead of time so we don't have 40 people show up to one class. Questions about how this is going to work? No? Okay, let me hand out the first homework. There are 3 math questions, and then the 4th question, I'll ask you to look at my website and critique it and tell me what site to get rid of and what site to add. So previous students have designed the links on that site, and you'll be continuing that. Check to make sure you've got 2 sides to that, too. We will not be meeting next week for discussion. You will have lecture on Wednesday, but because there are no discussions meeting on Monday because of Martin Luther King Day, we'll also not meet. So this homework is going to be due in 2 weeks. For those of you who are more inspired than others, I already have homework 2 posted to my website. That's not due for 3 weeks. You don't need to worry about it, but part of homework 2 will be working with a computer program that's available in like the Fishbowl or the other ITD sites, and it'll take you about an hour to figure out. So if perchance this Saturday evening you're sitting at home and you're really bored and you want to work with a computer program, you already have the opportunity to do that. But most of you, I don't expect to think about it for 2 weeks, and that's okay. So don't panic when you see the homework 2 on the website when you look at it and say, maybe there are 2 homeworks due. No, homework 1 is due in 2 weeks. And I think that pretty much covers everything we need for an introduction. Are there questions about anything we've talked about so far? No? Okay. What we're going to do then for the rest of the class is move down to the 3rd floor, to the planetarium, and talk about what we see in the sky. You can bring your stuff with you. We'll leave from there. You can leave it here if you want to, and we'll just lock the door. Thank you.